Hello and welcome to the commentary for lesson 288, Proverbs 5 and 6. I'm hoping this one will be shorter than the last one. I apologize that I made that one so long, but I just had a lot to say. Okay, so this one, did you get the message about immoral women? Wow. This is written by Solomon again, and he's speaking not just to his son, but to all the men of Israel, trying to speak into their lives as young men to prepare them for the dangers that are ahead of them. And first and foremost is immoral women. So he says in verse 1, "My son, pay attention to my wisdom." Verse 3, "For the lips of an immoral woman are as sweet as honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is as bitter as poison, as dangerous as a double-edged sword." So, that's a good visualization, but it goes into detail then about just how your life is going to fall apart if you get mixed up with a bad girl, right? With an evil, immoral woman. It says that her feet go down to death, her steps lead straight to the grave. So you don't want to get mixed up with her. Now, my sons, listen to me. Never stray from what I am about to say. Stay away from her. Don't go near the door of her house. If you do, you will lose your honor. Nothing will go well for you if you chase after her. If you put yourself in a position to be tempted, it will lead to disgrace. It will lead to public humiliation. It will lead to dishonor. Your life will crumble. I mean, it goes through details about your health, your wealth, everything will suffer. Verse 15 through 17, it's more specifically about your wife. Don't cheat on your wife. I like how it uses the metaphor of the well. In 15, it says, "Drink water from your own well. Share your love only with your wife. Why spill the water of your springs in the streets having sex with just anyone? You should reserve it for yourselves. Never share it with strangers." Don't cheat on your wife. So this reminds me of swingers, you know, people who are married or in a committed relationship and they decide that they're going to go to a party where they're going to swap partners. This is scripture, in case you didn't already know, just from common sense, that would dishonor God. This tells us very specifically that God does not like that. No swingers. That's clear. And then, I love verse 18 and 19. "Let your wife be a fountain of blessing for you. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. She is a loving deer, a graceful doe." I love that. She may not look as good as she did way back then, but it really does get better the longer you're with someone. I can say that from experience that, you know, my husband and I have been married for, I'm not even sure, I have trouble with dates and times, but I think about 24 years we've been married. And it really has gotten better with time. And I didn't think that would be so. I kind of thought that it would be more lovey-dovey at the beginning in the honeymoon stage. And then I've heard that you have that 2 years is where it starts to get harder. And then the 7-year itch. And you hear about all these times in your marriage where people typically come into problems. And we've had problems and we've had struggles and we've had some instability throughout the years. But if you hang on to each other and you just decide to work it out, you decide that, hey, I made the commitment to this person, I'm going to honor that commitment. And, you know, unless there's belligerent cheating and abuse of some sort or drug use that can't be reconciled, that unless there's something really major going on, you really need to try to work it out. It's so worth it. Like this says, she is a loving deer, a graceful doe. She may not look as great as she once was, but don't trade her in for a newer model. She's worth it. Keep her. I love it. I always just said that because my husband likes old things. He likes old trucks, old shirts, and that's how I know he'll never give up on us as we go. That was something I wrote to him years back that, you know, as much as I get annoyed with his old clothes that he won't get rid of, it also reminds me that he doesn't just get rid of things that don't look good anymore. He loves things and he prefers not to have change. He prefers the same things. When we go to a restaurant, he likes to order the same thing over and over again because he knows it's good and he knows he likes it. And so that kind of, you know, reassures me that he won't give up on us either. Love that. And ironically, in verse 19, it continues and says, "Let her breasts satisfy you always." That is ironic because I no longer have them after breast cancer and a double mastectomy, but, you know, that really hasn't changed much of anything in our marriage. In fact, that whole episode of breast cancer, I believe, brought us closer together, not just to each other, but also individually to God, which, if you think of love as a triangle, you have the bottom two corners are a husband and a wife, and God is at the top of the triangle. And the closer each of you are to God, the closer you are to each other. The further you are from God, the further apart from each other you are. And we discovered that. We experienced that closeness, and it's getting better every day. And it's not always perfect, of course, but we are committed to that. And I just thank God for blessing me with a good man that we've been able to grow together in that way. And then it continues, verse 19, "May you always be captivated by her love." You hope that that's the way it is, right? That's the true love story that we all want, don't we? We all just really desire to have that kind of love. Okay, so then verse 21 says, "For the Lord sees clearly what a man does, examining every path he takes. An evil man is held captive by his own sins. They are ropes that catch and hold him. He will die for lack of self-control. He will be lost because of his great foolishness." So that kind of sums up that whole Proverbs, really, in the last three verses, for sure. Then we get to Proverbs 6, and it talks about lessons for daily life. So it's more of a cornucopia of ideas and wise sayings. The first part is interesting. Verses 1 through 3 talks about if you have put up security for a friend's debt. I think of that as maybe co-signing for a loan. That's how that would look today, right? You know someone who needs a car, needs transportation, they have bad credit, they don't have the money to get a car themselves. You want to help them out, you want to do the nice thing and be generous, and so you co-sign for a loan. Never really a good idea, honestly, because you become trapped by that agreement, as it says in verse 2. And verse 3 says, "Follow my advice and save yourself, for you have placed yourself at your friend's mercy." Yes, you do place yourself at your friend's mercy, and it can ruin friendships. It can destroy relationships because if they don't pay, you have to pay. You're legally bound to. So you're going to be upset with them. They're going to be probably upset with you in an odd way. I think it's just defensiveness. And then it says, "Now swallow your pride. Go and beg to have your name erased." Now, I don't know how you would do that in today's economy, but I think the main idea is here that we should not overextend our financial resources. And we have to find balance between being generous to someone who needs help, who needs a leg up, and also being good stewards with what God has given us. Money is kind of a funny thing. It can really destroy relationships, and we've probably all experienced that to some extent. Okay, verses 6 through 11 really was an ouch for me. That hit home a little bit. It was about laziness, and I admit, you know, verse 10, it says, a little extra sleep, a little more slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Man, that's me to a T, because I love my snooze button in the morning. I push that thing. I probably push that snooze button 3 times before I'm able to get up. It's like I'm sleeping so hard, and I need more. I need more. So I am totally guilty of this. But it says to take, back in verse 6, take lessons from the ants, you lazy bones, which is kind of funny they use that Solomon uses the word lazy bones, but which is just the translation. It's not Solomon's word, but basic idea. So learn from your ways and become wise, from their ways and become wise. For even though they don't have anyone pushing them like a ruler or a king or a governor to make them work, ants just know that they need to work when there's times of plenty to make it through the winter. They gather food for the winter. And in the same way, when we are in times of plenty, we need to prepare for harder times, just like Joseph did back in the Old Testament, right? Pharaoh had the dream, and there was going to be years of plenty and then years of plague and starvation, I guess, where there was just no food. And because they prepared, because Pharaoh had the dream and Joseph interpreted it, they knew to store up their grain and their supplies to carry them through the tough times. Ants instinctively know to do that. I don't know that we as a generation, especially in American culture, that we do that. You know, do we have a savings account that can save us during hard times? A lot of us live paycheck to paycheck. I mean, I could have looked up some numbers and shared some statistics with you, but I'm sure it's frightening to know that the number of people that live paycheck to paycheck, and that any emergency, which is bound to happen, whether your car breaks down or you need new tires, I mean, Christmas comes once a year. It's not an emergency, but things happen. And are we prepared for those things that happen, or do we just get further and further in debt? So this is really about laziness. It's also not saying that we can't rest. It's not saying that rest is bad. It's saying, because we know that God created the Sabbath day for us to rest, right? But we shouldn't be resting when we should be working. So we need to recognize there's a time for rest and there's a time for work. And don't get the two confused. So, I'm tired a lot, and I can be lazy sometimes. So, that was an ouch. That was a convicting scripture. Verses 12 through 15 says, what are the worthless and wicked people like? And it gives details, descriptions of wicked people. They're constant liars. They're deceitful. Verse 14 says, their perverted hearts plot evil, and they constantly stir up trouble. So verse 15 reminds us that we don't need to worry about whether or not the wicked get justice. Remember, that was a big concern of King David's. He was always concerned about the wicked, and he wanted to make sure that they got what was coming to them. He even prayed for revenge with God. It was kind of strange. He was obsessed with revenge and with justice. But we don't need to worry about that. Verse 15 says, but they will be destroyed suddenly, broken in an instant, beyond all hope of healing. So we don't wish terror on people. We don't wish destruction on people. But you can be sure that all things play out in the end, even if it doesn't seem like it, even if it seems like the wicked do well, and that their wealth gets bigger and bigger, and they're, you know, they nothing seems to bother them. Nothing seems to hurt them. They just go through life with no trouble at all. And this reminds us that, you know, they'll get theirs. It might not be on the timetable that we'd like to see, but God is a just God. Verses 16 through 19, there are 6 things the Lord hates. I like how it changes, how he changes, and he says, no, 7 things, because 7 is a number of completion, and I say God's favorite number, but, you know, it seems like he really likes the number 7. So, these are the things he doesn't like. Haughty eyes. Haughty means proud or arrogant. So yeah, he doesn't like pride. A lying tongue. Hands that kill the innocent. Hearts that plot evil. Feet that race to do wrong. So just mean being, you know, can't wait to get into trouble, right? False witness. Someone who lies on the witness stand. Pours out lies which affects someone else's life. And a person who sows discord in a family. That means gossiping, someone who causes tension, strife, stirring up trouble, basically, within the family. And we all know people that do that, right? And then it goes back to, verse 20. My son, obey your father's commands and don't neglect your mother's instruction. And then it goes into detail about how well things will go for you if you listen to your parents and follow their instruction. And that's true if you have good and godly parents. But in today's society, that's hardly ever the case, it seems. I mean, if, again, with statistics, I wish I would have gathered these before I started recording. It would have been really good to include. But, you know, the divorce rate is high, and it's rare that you have a strong, healthy family with good balance, and both parents are strong Christians and they lead the right way. I mean, that's definitely the minority when it comes to people's home life and family situations. So, not so much these days. But verse 23 says, "For their command is a lamp and their instruction a light. Their corrective discipline is the way to life." That's, I think of that as, you know, learning to obey your parents, even though they're imperfect, which they are, and they will let you, even the best ones will let you down at some point in some way. But obeying your parents is really practice for learning to obey God. How can you be obedient to God if you haven't even mastered being obedient to your parents? It's practice, right? Our parents will let us down, but God will never let us down. That's the big difference and what gives us hope. And then it says that obeying your father's commands and don't neglect your mother's instruction, that it will keep you from the immoral woman. Okay, back to the woman thing. Don't lust for her beauty. Don't let her coy glances seduce you. For a prostitute will bring you poverty, but sleeping with another man's wife will cost you your life. And then it says, verse 27, can a man scoop a flame into his lap and not have his clothes catch on fire? It's saying basically, don't play with fire. This is going to get you into trouble. It's not going to go well for you. And then it goes into the extremes of, you know, sleeping with another man's wife is a big deal. Don't do it. So really, that's it for Proverbs 5 and 6. There was a lot of good meat in there. And definitely knocking down the topic of immoral women. That seems to be, and ironically in Proverbs 7, there's more of that. So big warning signs about that, can really mess a guy up. So that's really it for today. I'll be excited to keep up this week and hopefully be able to post every day. I love it. So, it's good to be back on a regimen now that the boys are back in school. So anyways, hope you all have a great day. I will talk to you soon.